This is the More Than Right podcast, and I'm your host, Steve Lopez. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, has been around since 1949. Its original 12 members, with the United States pulling most of the weight, originally served as a military bulwark against Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin's expansionist designs on Western Europe. Since the end of the Second World War, NATO has expanded to 31 nations who are expected to contribute 2% of their gross domestic product, or GDP, to pay for the organization's upkeep. But in 2023, only 11 nations met their financial obligations to the European alliance. Chief among NATO's deadbeat nations is Germany, whose GDP is Europe's largest at $4 trillion. This spurred then-President Donald Trump to withdraw 9,500 American troops from Germany in July of 2020. Trump said, quote, "Germany is paying a very small fraction of what they're supposed to be paying. They should be paying 2%, and they're paying a little bit more than 1% depending on how you calculate. But if you assume they're paying 1%, that's a tremendous delinquency," unquote. Well, with the crisis at our southern border, inflation on the rise, again, and the release of Special Counsel Robert Hur's bombshell report declaring President Joe Biden mentally unfit to serve in office, it's looking very likely Americans will return Trump to the White House. At a recent campaign rally in South Carolina, President Trump had a few choice words for our European allies. He told the crowd about the time he attended a NATO meeting and substituted the usual diplomatic niceties for a little Trumpian bluntness.
"I came in, I made a speech, and I said, 'You got to pay up.' They asked me that question. One of the presidents of a big country stood up and said, 'Well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us?' I said, 'You didn't pay? You're delinquent?' He said, 'Yes, let's say that happened. No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay. You got to pay your bills.' And the money came flowing in."
According to the New York Times, quote, "Presidents George W. Bush and Barack Obama both pressed NATO allies to increase military spending. It was a regular theme of Robert M. Gates, who served as defense secretary under both presidents. One way Mr. Trump is different is that he has made this a far more consistent and far more intense theme of nearly every discussion he has about NATO. He may have better luck than his predecessors at badgering allies into increasing their spending simply because he has made it an essential condition of America's relationship with the alliance," unquote. 5 days after Trump's speech, NATO announced that 18 of its member states will pay their financial obligations to the NATO alliance. Quote, "A record 18 out of NATO's 31 countries are expected to meet the alliance's defense spending goals this year, a commitment Donald Trump has been pushing for in his White House re-election campaign," unquote. And here's the best part. The Canadian Broadcasting Company says, quote, "In an historic first since the end of the Cold War, Berlin will meet the 2% target this year for the first time," unquote. So, what does Trump really think of NATO? According to Trump's former National Security Advisor, John Bolton, not much. In an interview with Politico, Bolton said, quote, "At the NATO summit in 2018, he, Trump, came very close to withdrawing from NATO right there at the summit. So each of these comments, as he makes them now over 6 years, to me simply reinforces that the notion of withdrawing from NATO is very serious with him. Look, I was there when he almost withdrew, and he's not negotiating, because his goal is not to strengthen NATO. It's to lay the groundwork to get out," unquote. As mentioned previously, NATO's reason for being was to stand as a deterrent against Soviet aggression aimed at a war-torn and economically weak Western Europe. 80 years later, Europe has recovered economically, and in case you missed it, the Soviet Union collapsed back in January 1991. But in 2011, NATO moved beyond its defensive parameters to one of aggression when its member states intervened in the Libyan civil war. President Obama later added U.S. air assets to the endeavor that ended with the toppling of Muammar Gaddafi's regime and his killing. In a Rose Garden address, President Obama said,
"Today the government of Libya announced the death of Muammar Gaddafi. This marks the end of a long and painful chapter for the people of Libya, who now have the opportunity to determine their own destiny in a new and democratic Libya."
Libya never became a democracy, and today is barely a nation at all. Instead, it's become a patchwork of warring factions and a haven for Islamic terror groups, like the Al-Qaeda splinter group that attacked the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, murdering American Ambassador Christopher Stevens and three others in 2012, 1 year after NATO's intervention. In a 2014 interview with New York Times columnist Thomas Friedman, Obama reflected on what lesson he learned from the Libyan intervention.
"I think we underestimated, our European partners underestimated, the need to come in full force. If you're going to do this, then it's the day after Gaddafi's gone, when everybody's feeling good and everybody's holding up posters saying, 'Thank you, America.' At that moment, there has to be a much more aggressive effort to rebuild societies that didn't have any civic traditions, right? You've had a despot for 40 years in place. There are no traditions there to build on."
Obama's prescription for Libya was U.S. policy in Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan. The latter ended with a disastrous U.S. withdrawal shortly after Joe Biden entered the White House. This despite sinking $1 trillion U.S. tax dollars into Afghanistan to establish democratic and educational institutions over 20 years. Despite all our efforts, with 2,402 American dead and 20,713 wounded, democracy did not take hold in Afghanistan, and the Taliban allies of Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden came back to power. It was reminiscent of America's wasted efforts in Vietnam, where America's dead totaled 58,220. We withdrew from there in 1975. Nation-building is a long-term enterprise. We defeated the Axis powers in 1945, but continue to maintain 50,000 U.S. troops in Japan and 35,000 in Germany. Nobody in Washington likes to speak of it, but Russian President Vladimir Putin's military push into Ukraine occurred after it became U.S. policy to speak openly about expanding NATO into Eastern Europe. At a news conference last December, Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the NATO powers. Quote, "You promised us in the 1990s that NATO would not move an inch to the east. You cheated us shamelessly," unquote. What explains NATO's move from a defensive alliance to one of provocative diplomatic and military actions, like its inexplicable intervention in Libya? And remember, NATO's intervention in Libya triggered a humanitarian crisis that persists more than a decade later. The ramifications of the U.S. and NATO's actions in Ukraine are far more troubling, considering Putin's implied threat to use nuclear weapons if NATO intervenes directly in Ukraine. President George Washington observed in his farewell address that a nation, quote, "which indulges toward another an habitual hatred or an habitual fondness is in some degree a slave," unquote. And that it, quote, "must pay with a portion of its independence," unquote. Trump's antipathy for NATO represents a return to first things. You see, Trump, like Washington before him, puts America's interests First, our entanglement with NATO seems to be leading the United States in the direction of nuclear confrontation with Russia. As House Republicans, at least for now, refuse to pass a Senate bill giving additional aid to Ukraine, bipartisan forces in Congress claim the Russians have developed a space-based anti-satellite weapon. They say the threat posed by this new weapons system requires their colleagues to stop stalling and pass the Ukraine appropriation, which also includes additional funding for U.S. military weaponry. Perhaps a Trump victory this November will force Ukraine and Russia to the negotiating table, avoiding further bloodshed, thus lowering tensions between the two great nuclear powers. After which, Americans may want to reevaluate the foreign entanglements that have led them to this dangerous point and ask if we should prioritize the interests of the world or put America first. That concludes this edition of the More Than Right podcast. If you feel so inclined, please like and subscribe to the podcast. Until next time, this is Steve Lopez.